everybody, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of the Roost, your premier source for Rice Sports news and analysis. Coming off a bye week, we are heading into what we can probably call Rice's most winnable game so far. So we will spend the back half of this episode talking about UTSA and Rice's upcoming game against them in San Antonio. But before we get into that, we will have a couple of news items to go over, some housekeeping stuff. And then we were going to have a little treat for y'all. We have an interview with Adam Martinez. Is his name? Yeah, of CUSA Report.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Matt did a little interview with him earlier in the week that we just on the state of CUSA and kind of some overview about what the season's been like for the conference overall so far. So, yeah, we'll get started with some news items, covering some general Rice stuff, including, a friend of the podcast getting drafted into a new football league, and then, some stuff about women's basketball as well.
It's been a busy week.
Yeah.
So much for an off week, right? Well, yeah, you alluded to the first ever guest of the Roost podcast is back in the big leagues. Jack Fox got drafted today by the St. Louis Battlehawks of the XFL. So he is the latest and greatest XFL player. And the league does have a team in Houston, so hopefully we get to see him in person at some point this year. So congrats to Jack on that. Get some good film and get another shot at the NFL for sure. And then speaking on some NFL guys, we'll go ahead and put an update of all the current NFL owls on the website. And we go and drop that every Sunday or Monday, Tuesday, depending on the games. And had a couple notables that I thought were fun and interesting over the past couple weeks. So Austin Walter got signed a couple weeks ago onto the Giants practice squad. And then, of course, Saquon and Wayne Gallman got hurt, and he got promoted. And he played his first NFL snap in a regular season game the Thursday they played the Patriots, which that was pretty sweet to see. And then one more thing, news that we actually broke a couple weeks ago, Calvin Anderson signing with the Broncos. That's neat, but the more interesting thing, and I think, Carter, you'll agree, the most Rice thing about this is Anderson announced this week that he's become the first professional athlete ambassador for Rubik's Cubes, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, for those of you who are not as familiar with Calvin, he became kind of known his last year at Rice for being able to solve. He can solve a Rubik's Cube behind his back without looking at it. Which is pretty impressive. You know, a Rubik's Cube is one of those things. This is, you know, it'll appeal to the Rice demographic. It's one of those things. It's essentially an algorithm, right? I've never learned to do it myself, but you learn a process for doing it. And so that's how people can do it, like blindfolded behind the back in under 10 seconds. Cause you learn kind of a process for doing it. But, I don't think there are a whole lot of, Division I football players, guys who eventually go on to play in the NFL who, take the trouble to learn that, and it definitely takes some skill and some hard work to get that done. So it was always a pretty impressive thing for Calvin, and clearly the makers of Rubik's Cubes have noticed. So yeah, really proud of him. That's a great thing.
We don't have a game to break down for this episode, so we pull up my notes and we'll work through the Rubik's Cube algorithm. Maybe not. We're a Rice podcast, but we're not quite that Rice. We'll see.
Yeah. So
a couple other non-Rubik's notes. The women's basketball preseason coaches polls and things were released this week, and not a surprise, but the Rice women's basketball team was picked to repeat and win Conference USA, which that's not a surprise, but I was kind of surprised that they gave somebody else three first place votes and Rice was not unanimous, which is silly, but it is what it is. But Erica Ogwumike, you know, as soon as I try and say things fast, Erica Ogwumike was named the preseason Conference USA Player of the Year, preseason Player of the Year. That she was named that last year too and lived up to it. So that season and the men's season is, I shoot, from the time of release of this, like 2 weeks away or something like that.
Getting close. Yep.
So we'll be busy there. So those are some rice things, and then a couple podcast things. I want to make sure everybody, you can go ahead right now, and it's free. You can join and become a member of the site. Go to atthurbers.com/community and find our message board, and we kind of leave some exclusive content for you guys that are supporting us and are members with us. It's free. Just go ahead and create an account, and like we have practice notes that we'll leave on there and lock down just for your eyes only for the Roost faithful and the Rice faithful. This week we had some notes on some true freshmen, and you know, during the off week, and I guess we'll get to this a little bit. One of the things that Rice did was kind of go and look at their personnel groupings and kind of reevaluate the depth chart and see what plays and formations and different combinations would be most beneficial and they need to run more. So in that process, they found a couple of freshmen that kind of stood out, and we might see more over the second half of the season than we did the first. So things like that, that we're treating for just you guys, you can go ahead and find there, and I'll give you a hint, a certain quarterback that we talked about in the preseason that name rhymes with Ovani.
Brovani Bronson.
Brovani Bronson. We just went from total rice to not being able to rhyme. So there you go. So there's a lot of good stuff there. So go ahead and become a member, please, and then read plenty of interesting stuff about guys on the way in.
And I'll throw in an endorsement on those practice updates. I am the sort of person who consumes basically every bit of information possible about the sports teams I follow. Like for Alabama, I read practice reports from like three different websites, even through during the season. I will also confess that I'm a Golden State Warriors fan because Steph Curry forever, not to offend all the Rockets fans that are probably listening to this, but I read like game recaps of their preseason and summer league games so that I can see the guys who are going to be like number 12, 13, and 14 on the roster, because I'm just an information junkie like that. You don't get that, like, a lot of college teams are very tight-lipped with their information about stuff. Like Alabama's practice periods that they allow in for media guys are about 10 minutes long, and they don't really get to see a whole lot in those. And the kind of information that Matt's able to get about, you know, that Rice wants to change the personnel groupings and refocus and maybe get some more snaps for these guys and, you know, kind of change some philosophy stuff going forward, that stuff is not available for a lot of programs because of how tight-lipped, really unnecessarily so, I think, because there's only so much information you can really glean from that kind of stuff, even in practice. But I think you are not going to see this kind of stuff from what you get for a lot of other programs. So I would really encourage you all to make an account so that you can read those updates, because they're really informative and you really don't get that kind of information in coverage for a lot of other teams.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. I think they're worth it. And yeah, I like just talking with folks in the industry. Like I know Oklahoma was getting some heat in the preseason for only allowing like 10 minutes of it wasn't even full practice. It was like a couple warmups during fall camp that reporters could go see and talk about. And so like credit to Rice and the administration, like this university is committed to building this brand, and a part of that is letting folks like me come in and tell that story. So it's fun. I'm glad I get to do it, and we get to see things like I got to see them practice five wide before they actually ran it in a game, and it had some notes on those formations. Sacrilege. And the creativity there. They ran it twice. Now it's funny because this is a tangent, but the 2-5 wide plays they call were both in the first quarter against UAB, and one of those was called back on an offensive holding on the Rice offensive line, and the other one was pass interference downfield. So neither of those actually counted. So in the official box score, Rice has still not run a true 5-wide formation this season, I think. But there you go. You'll get notes on things like that where Rice is doing, and they did a lot of interesting things on offense, and I had a couple notes on that in this week's update. So lots of good stuff and more to come.
All right. Well, with all that out of the way, we will get into now an interview with Adam Martinez from CUSA Report. Lots of good stuff in here about the state of the conference so far and the way things have gone through. I think every team is at 6 games in, and we're 7 weeks into a 14-week regular season. So, wow, has the college football season gone by fast so far? But we'll get kind of a midseason check on the conference as a whole. So we'll go to that now.
Rice did not play a game this week, but Conference USA was busy. So we have special guest Adam Martinez with the Conference USA Report and Mean Green Nation to kind of walk us through what's been going on with the conference this week and I guess the past couple of months now that we're at the midway point of the season. Adam, thanks for jumping on with us. How are you?
Hey, Matt. Glad to be here. I don't know if I can say I'm excited about it because I think Conference USA this season has been a little bit down. I mean, it's kind of weird where, like, Rice, right, you know, you know all about Rice, is, like, expected to be or kind of considered to be a solid team, but they're winless right now. So it's been that kind of season. But I'm good. I'm otherwise good, you know.
Well, and I guess on the confusing or interesting results, we can stop right off the bat. The team with the best record, the only 3-0 team in Conference USA right now is Western Kentucky. And they started their season off with a loss to an FCS team. Does that kind of sum up this year in Conference USA in a nutshell?
Yeah, I've been saying all season, if anybody's listened to the Conference USA Report podcast or read anything I've written, I've said that, you know, despite whatever happens, you have a chance in this league. If your team is not perfect, you have a chance because nobody else is really perfect, right? Western Kentucky, as you said, lost to an FCS team and is 3-0, and they beat last year's champ, right, UAB. And, you know, their defense looks, like, super solid, but if you look at them, you're not really shaking in your boots, right, if you're, like, FAU or something, because you're thinking, well, that Western Kentucky team can't really move the ball, right? Ty Story was, what, 21-30-something for 140 yards passing. You feel like, you know what, if we can just score a little bit against that really good defense, we're going to be okay. But yes, as you said, it doesn't really matter how you feel about it because they're 3-0 right now, right? So, like, eventually somebody's going to need to beat that team in this league. And, you know, you look like favorite, preseason favorite in the East Division, FIU. They're 0-2 right now.
You know, I guess they still did win this weekend, right? Over Charlotte.
Well, no. You're right. They beat Charlotte, but they still have a long way to go to make it up, right? They lost to this Western Kentucky team, so they have that game to make up. You know, you still have a chance because, you know, Western Kentucky is not like a world beater right now, but that's the case with this league, is that nobody's really that good, even the best teams. You look in the West, right? Louisiana Tech, they're, like, getting shaky wins. You know, yes, they dominated UMass, but I think everybody that's played UMass this season has dominated them. Really, my favorite right now is, like, Southern Miss. And even they have some questions, or I have some questions about them. But, I mean, yeah, yes, it's a weird season. Western Kentucky did beat Army, which is an impressive win. I'm very impressed by that win. But you look at it and you say, wow, they did it almost with, like, half an offense.
And you mentioned the incompleteness of most teams. So right now it's Louisiana Tech and Southern Miss in the West and Western Kentucky and FAU in the East. Those are the four remaining undefeated teams in conference. Is it simply a case of Southern Miss's offense is so good that you'd pencil them in as the favorite right now? Or are we at the point where, you know, 2-0, 3-0, that might not matter given how shaky the league is as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a believer in Southern Miss. I said coming into the season, I think I roughly had it something like Louisiana Tech as the number one, Southern Miss, UAB, North Texas kind of in that second tier. I thought Southern Miss would, you know, have a leg up against North Texas because they had them at home, and I think we kind of saw that. North Texas might be without Fine for a long period of time, if not forever at this point. So you can maybe scratch them out of the running, and they haven't really looked so good. And, you know, UAB lost. So Louisiana Tech, you know, they're always kind of iffy there. So, yeah, Southern Miss is the favorites. But there are some turnover questions, right? Jack Abraham is a great quarterback, and he's super accurate, but for whatever reason, he likes to turn the ball over. He throws lots of interceptions. There were some – he had, like, a weird fumble thing in this last game. He never made a huge mistake or anything like that, and they have a ton of playmakers, right? A lot of their offense is throw it short or get the ball in space to their best players and let them go make a play, right? Quez Watkins was amazing. Jalen Adams can score from anywhere on the field. DeMichael Harris is amazing also, and he's ridiculously fast. You like that, but I wonder what happens when they go against, you know, like a Western Kentucky, maybe even a Marshall, who's like whose offense is very terrible right now. But there are some good defenses in the East. You know, FAU's, you know, they can do some things on defense. I don't like to count them out. There are some good defenses, right? You know, UAB has a solid defensive line. They can disrupt a lot of things. So once they get tested, this Southern Miss team, by some of those defenses, then we'll have an answer. I don't know, that's kind of a silly thing to say. You're like, well, once they play the game, then we'll know if they could have won the game. But you get my meaning, right? Like,
the season is 6 or 7 games in, but we still, most of these teams have only played 2 or 3 conference games. So in the case of Southern Miss, I know they got a good test this weekend against North Texas, but with Fine going down, you're right, we still don't know as much as we'd like to know. And then on the North Texas piece, it was always going to be outscoring people as the formula, with Fine possibly hurt for even, a couple weeks. Can we write them off? If they lose 3 or 4 games without Fine, is their season or their chance to contend for a crown as good as done?
Sorry, that is my kid crying up there. That's what that is.
Real life.
Yeah. To answer your question, let's say North Texas is Mason Fine coming into the season. We knew that the defense was going to be young and inexperienced. They lost both linebackers, right? EJ Agia. You lose Brandon Garner, excellent linebacker. They were experienced. They had been scored upon, right, in the years before that. It's like FAU destroyed them the season prior to their senior season. So they were tested. They had seen it. They're, you know, very good. They were the source of a lot of sacks and you know, a lot of pressure on the quarterback, which caused turnovers. Mm-hmm. Nate Brooks was a corner. Kimon Hall was the other corner. They lost them all. So now you look, you got Cam Johnson on one side. You got Nick Harvey on the other side at the corner spots. Very talented Davis and Davis, right? KD and Tyreek manning those spots now. They've played well in spots, but they've made a lot of young, inexperienced mistakes. They shoot the wrong gap. They over pursue. They don't know exactly where they're supposed to stand in the zone or something. They're not reacting to what the offense is doing immediately or the way that a veteran player would do. So we knew that would happen, right? You can see some evidence of the talent and how they're going to be good, but right now they're very exploitable, right, by a very good offense. Houston, good offensive mind. SMU, good offensive mind, and, you know, Sonny Dykes and Dana Holgerson at both of those places. So, they've been able to really make that defense look bad, and that's not surprising, right? They looked good against Cal, North Texas did, and they looked good against UTSA. Two teams not really known for powerful offenses. So, you know, I think some fans have been like, well, are they good? Are they bad? No, they're getting better against the Southern Miss team. They looked good in spots. And then at other times, it looked like they really couldn't handle a powerful offense with playmakers all over the field. And, you know, again, I didn't mention this earlier, but Southern Miss did score against Alabama, right? You know what I mean? Like DeMichael Harris, I think he scored against Alabama. This is a very talented team, and no one should be ashamed if you're like, well, you know, DeMichael Harris ran away from me. Well, he's running away from a lot of dudes. So, yeah, you know, that's what that is. The problem has been offensively is that North Texas was expected to be score for score with a lot of these teams. In 2016, when North Texas made something like a miracle run to the conference title game, they did it on the strength of their offense. The defense had similar issues. But Mason Fine, you know, threw, I forget the number of passes, like 31-something passes or something like this. They scored. They had big play potential. They, you know, won a few games by luck, right?
Which always happens when you're making a title run. Yeah.
Yeah. last second drives, you know, a perfect catch, no call, you know, this kind of thing. I said 2016, it was 2017. But yeah, that season they went, what, seven plays in 50 seconds against UTSA with no timeouts. One of those plays was a 45-yard heave to, you know, Mike Lawrence along the sideline in double coverage. You need that kind of luck. They haven't got that kind of luck this season. And Bodie Reeder is expected to kind of continue, keep the wheel going as he took over for the departed Graham Harrell. Didn't happen. There's a lot of guys looking confused out there, a lot of receivers not making plays. And I think last night you had a stark contrast of a team with talented playmakers, you know, getting them the ball in spots where they were dangerous. And you had another team with some playmakers not making plays. And it's not like, well, you know, get the ball to Jalen Darden and he's not scoring. He could score, but like Mason Fine could not get the ball to them as quickly. It looked like he was trying to find his guys and they were not getting open, or the play wasn't getting them open, or Southern Miss would just look too dangerous, getting in the backfield and hitting them. So I would count out North Texas until they show everybody that, hey, well, you know, we figured it out. I don't think, what is it, six games into the season? That's halfway through, plus all of fall camp. I think North Texas is who North Texas is at this point.
Yeah, we have, I guess, a good enough sample size on them. And to some extent, if we flip over one more time to the East with Marshall, I feel like they were a similar team to North Texas, where a lot of people were picking them to win their half the division with some obvious question marks. And they've had a tough schedule, but they've won, I guess they're 3-3 right now, but they've looked pretty bad. Is it just some good competition that has kind of kept things even, or are they another team that, you know, is kind of struggling more than expected, you know, I guess out of the gates?
They've looked bad to me. Right. So like, you just go game by game. They beat VMI. Offense looks great against them. And you're like, okay, if they can, you know, get say 75% of this offense, that they showed against, you know, an overmatched team in the league, they should be great, because the defense is still expected to be great. You play Boise State at Boise State, and that was one of the more impressive losses of the season, right? You lose 14-7, but I think Boise State had just come off beating Florida State, so you felt real good about that one if you're a Marshall fan.
But they had, like, what, 50 yards after halftime or something like that?
Yeah, so you're like, okay, our offense is not quite there yet, but again, you look at the rest of the league and you're like, okay, that shouldn't be bad. If we can shut down Boise State, certainly we can shut down, you know, Middle Tennessee, or, you know, a Charlotte, what have you. Bad loss to Cincinnati. Bad loss to Middle Tennessee. You get a win against Old Dominion, but Old Dominion is not very good. So, you know, I'm not super impressed, and I don't feel like, you know what, they have made the turn. Old Dominion had, I don't think they've scored more than 20 in a few games. So, you know, like, I'm not super impressed by this game. But that it's, yes, you give them a round of applause because you get a win, right? I don't want to sound like, you know, a crazy person. Yes, you got to win, but it's Old Dominion, right? They're 0-2. They're bottom of the conference last season. They're offensively challenged, you know, whatever. And even if you want to give Old Dominion lots of credit for hanging with, like, say, a Virginia Tech or Virginia, I mean, those teams are having some struggles themselves. Marshall right now does not look like they can compete with, say, an FAU or Western Kentucky. I know they beat Middle Tennessee. I'm not super excited about Middle Tennessee either. But, yeah, same thing. Marshall is supposed to be the opposite of North Texas. Great defense. Offense, if they can do enough, they should be fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their defense has gotten exposed in a couple games, and their offense has been even more terrible at times.
And then I guess if we go one step further down the list, those are, for the most part, all teams that, if not favorites to win their respective divisions, they were kind of expected to be in the mix. Right now, CUSA has four teams, UTEP, Rice, Charlotte, and Old Dominion, that don't have a win yet in conference play. from the outside, I know I have plenty of thoughts on Rice, but from the outside, what is your kind of take on those winless teams, and how much of that is a factor of who they've played and which team looks closest to having that breakout?
Well, I guess if you listed four teams, right, we'll just start in the East. I think Charlotte is on the way up. You know, they were the highest scoring team in the league for a while there. They looked really good. You know, it seems like they figured out a way to primarily run the ball, but also be dynamic and unpredictable. Like, yes, we're going to run it, but you don't know how we're going to run it or where we're going to run it. They had a big, I guess, kind of shock loss when they played FAU. It was a homecoming game, and, you know, they kind of beat themselves. They lose that one, and then they go on a bye week, and they just drop another one right now. They're getting better. Everybody's excited about Will Healy. I think maybe they kind of, I don't want to say peaked, but they kind of rose up and got a little excited too soon. You know, then they had Clemson. That was just kind of bad scheduling timing. You get Clemson, and then you get FAU, and then, you know, a bye week. So they're kind of... I think the feeling right now is like, you know, what happened to all that momentum we had? Well, I think this is just kind of the reality of things. I like what they're doing. They have to figure out the players to get in those spots. We'll see where Healy, you know, stands in recruiting. I mean, he's certainly showed in his career at, I forget where he coached before, but he had success there. Like, just the name of the program escapes me right now. Old Dominion, on the other hand, they've been, you know, since that 10-win season, what is it now, like 4 years ago? They've been on the decline. Last year, they were expected to peak. You know, you talk to Ed Miller from the Virginia Pilot, and he covers them. And in our conversations, you know, he said that they kind of built their roster expecting to compete last season, like seriously. That didn't happen. And so now, instead of being like the natural rebuild, they've said, well, we have to have some kind of win season, right? You know, it's the opening of the new stadium or the redesigned stadium, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, so they have a lot of JUCO guys. They're trying to figure things out. And, I mean, I don't know. The plan right now is kind of reactive. So they're on the way down or just not really moving anywhere in my mind.
I guess that's the natural... When you bring in a bunch of JUCO guys, you hit on some, you miss on others. But like you said, trying to rebuild on the fly, which for a program, you know, is not at the point where we have some of these other teams like UTEP and Rice, Charlotte, all with relatively new head coaches. Old Dominion, Bobby Wilder, has been there for a while. So I guess he's the only coach that the program's had since they restarted last decade. Is this at the point where, you know, folks, Monarchs fans are kind of growing restless and looking for a change at some point? And how much rope does he have?
Well, again, you know, you talk to the guys that cover the team, and they say it's going to be hard to fire him. He's so beloved in the area. He's been, you know, the coach that started the program. He's had success there. He showed that you can do that thing. But I think that there is a time to switch from the guy that founded the place to somebody that can continue it on. I don't know that if they're at that point, but I think, you know, it's certainly time to maybe start asking those questions, right? I don't know that Old Dominion fans are pushing for that just yet, but I mean, how many losing seasons in a row? How many times can you hear the same, I guess, excuses, reasons in press conferences? I don't know. To me, it's going to be when the donors say, hey, we want a little return on our donations now, you know?
Sure.
I think the Old Dominion basketball is more, is number one in the hearts and minds of the Monarch faithful compared to football. But we'll see. We'll see. I think he has a longer leash than anybody else would.
All right.
Yeah. You know, turn it to the West. UTEP is in a similar position. That they have a few JUCO guys. They've missed on their quarterback. That's basically it. Brandon Jones, not really the answer. Kai Loxley was the talent expected to do some things. Neither of them seem like, you know, they are the dynamic running attack, running quarterback with explosive arm that they wanted them to be. And that's really held them back. Last season, they had a good defense that was filled with, like, seniors, existing players, basically. They've all graduated, right? Like, Nick Needham was a corner, and now he just got called up to the Dolphins. So NFL caliber dudes were on the defense last season. They had a good linebacking core. They've lost a lot of that, and so that's partly why they've struggled. But the big thing about this team is that they can't score, they can't move the ball. You look at minor social media or like message boards, everybody's complaining about the offense. Mike Canales was a former offensive coordinator at North Texas and briefly the interim head coach. But he's an offensive guy. Dana Dimmel, same thing. He's kind of an offensive guy. Nothing's really changed there. It's tough to recruit to El Paso, but you need an identity. And I don't know that they've really imposed and said you can't really see what they want to be so clearly. And they're not really executing that. You know, you contrast that with Rice, and I think this is why everybody's kind of higher than Rice. And I won't talk too much about this because obviously you follow it a lot more closely. But this whole intellectual brutality thing where you can see them, like they're lining up in some I formations and they're going to run at you again and again and again. And where it's not successful, you can see how it's going to be, right? You're like, wow, they're right there, you know, if only XYZ, maybe you get a little bit better quarterback that can really stretch the field and make the run game a little bit more dangerous. But all that together, you can see the outlines of what they want this to be at that program. So in my mind, UTEP is kind of middling. Rice is trending up, even though right now, you know, Rice is winless, which is it's kind of hilarious. It's like they are the most
respected. That is one word for it.
Yeah. Most respected 0-6 team in the nation, right? Most respected.
I haven't 0-2 checked. Team. How many 0-6 teams are there left in the nation?
It doesn't It'd matter because you are the most respected. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's been kind of like the refrain that Rice fans I know are tired of hearing, that they're the best winless team left in the nation. I know it's been kind of a struggle with, and I think there's a lot of Conference USA teams that we've kind of, when we've talked through records, that by virtue of this league and the scheduling, they get a lot of guarantee games up at the beginning of the year. And so they're playing a lot of Power Five, and you mentioned Marshall with Boise, and FAU's played UCF, some of those bigger named ranked teams at the beginning of the season. So everybody in the league already has one loss, if not two, before they get into conference play. So I guess there's a portion there, but the second half of the season, I know Rice fans are hoping that once we get into conference play, like you said, there's nobody that is really that good. There are some teams that are that bad, so hopefully that first win comes sooner rather than later.
I mean, yeah, you look down the list, right? The West Division foes. Rice escaped. Flip that. Louisiana Tech escaped against Rice. Like North Texas seems vulnerable. UTSA definitely seems beatable. And UTEP also. I don't know. I don't know where the win is going to come from. I think there's always a game where you're like, wow, how'd that happen? Did I say UAB? You know, that game was closer. That was a weird game, right? It was like delayed 2.5 hours. But it was 21-20 at halftime, right? Like it just seems like misfortune finds its way to Houston, you know, and just says, we're gonna the weirdest thing is gonna happen right now. I don't know.
I'm just glad that folks outside of Houston can see it as well. I need a verification that it's a little bit of bad luck.
I said, like, next week it's in San Antonio, right? Against yeah. UTSA. Not that those are games where you're like, okay, because it's 4 hours drive from Houston to San Antonio. Like that. Yeah, that's not a terrible trip, right? It's not that much travel. You can get a big crowd if people want to travel. There's a lot of Rice alums in San Antonio also. So that's one where you can say we can get a win right here. UTSA is very vulnerable. They were a bad tackling team for a while there. I think they played a little bit better against UAB, but not by much. Now, USM's going to be tough. Marshall's going to be tough, but that's at home. At Middle Tennessee, that's always a weird trip, right? You got fly to Nashville. And then, you know, home against North Texas. Remember I said it was kind of weird. South Latrell's first season, right? Rice had North Texas down 17-0. And it was like a big moment for North Texas there because they had just got blanked by Florida in the Swamp. And so there was a lot of angst. Everybody was like, where is this offense that we were supposed to see? This, you know, mm-hmm. air raid, where is it happening? And I think it was like a 3rd and 10. And Mason Fine basically threw into double coverage along the left sideline. And Rutherford comes down. Well, both Rice guys fall down like accidentally. And he finds his guy. He comes down with it. And that keeps the drive going. But that was going to be, I think, 7 straight quarters where they were scoreless. North Texas ends up going down and scoring a big touchdown. So instead of punting at 17-0 in that game, they get a touchdown, 17-7. And North Texas goes on to win against Rice in overtime. And that kind of rallied everybody, and that was a big moment. I also thought that was a big moment for Rice because it seemed like Rice was losing those kinds of games. And that kind of sealed the David Bailiff era, I guess. You know, one of the more most successful Rice head coaches in history. I think I always like to mention that. Like, yes, it ended poorly.
Yeah, he did a lot of good things.
Yeah, but he was 10 years there. He was one of the winningest coaches, I think, in history, certainly in recent history. You know, and he won a league title. So there you go. I think maybe you can use that as like a model for like what Bobby Wilder.
If we win this week, I'm bringing you back on the podcast next week and every subsequent week if you're the magic charm.
Yeah.
And I'll let you go. One last question for you. Just one or two things in the conference as a whole that you're kind of looking out on as we get to the second half of the season now.
I want to see if Western Kentucky is for real. They are. I mean, the defense. Here's the thing, if you're not someone in Bowling Green, right, and you're not a particular fan of like defense or the Hilltoppers, then those Western Kentucky games are hard to watch, right? It's like a grind. You look up like, man, is anybody gonna ever score or is anybody gonna score nicely? But they are winning 3-0. The defense is solid. Charlotte can score a little bit, but I think that Western Kentucky right now, at least, is a little bit more of a complete team, which is weird to say after I just said everybody's incomplete. But, you got Charlotte, Marshall, FAU, 3 big games in a row that is essentially going to decide the East, right? There's a stop at Arkansas for whatever reason, and then Southern Miss and Middle Tennessee to close it out. So this is where it gets good, all the conference games. And that's kind of what I'm looking for, right? Looking forward to. The battle between Tech, Southern Miss, and UAB is going to be interesting. Southern Miss is, they're fun and exciting. If you're, I guess, a conference, you would say casual, and you're like, your game is done. What other game should I watch? I would find a Southern Miss game because they have a lot of talented dudes that can, you always look at their box score. It's a different guy that has 200 yards receiving or something like this. It's ridiculous.
We'd take a few of those. Sweet, Adam. Well, thank you for jumping on. Where can we find your work and what you're doing?
Yeah, so you can go to CUSAReport.com. And, like I said, we try to be smart and cater to you, the, the discerning fan. So we cover all the teams, or try to, there. And also, for a long time, I've done MeanGreenNation.com. I am University of North Texas alum, and I've been doing Mean Green Nation for a long time. If you care a lot about North Texas stuff, then you can go there. That's right. You can find us on Twitter. It's Mean Green Nation for the Conference USA one. It's USA Report. I know a lot of people kind of know one of those two already, but yeah, thanks.
Perfect. Well, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You have a good one.
All right. Well, thanks so much to Adam for doing that interview with us. A lot of fun stuff in there. So we hope y'all enjoyed that. And now we will move on to this week's game against UTSA in San Antonio. You wouldn't necessarily think it, maybe looking at the records. Rice, as has been noted in a lot of different areas, including by us, has not won a game yet this season. UTSA does have 2 wins on the season. But UTSA is not a fan base or a program that has a lot of positive vibes around it right now. They, they were really great. I believe Frank Wilson's first year was 2016.
Yeah,
that's right. They had a lot of optimism surrounding the program back then, and they had a really good year that year. And they lost a lot of assistants over that offseason and have not really been able to recapture that magic, and now are kind of... There's not a lot of optimism in that program right now, shall we say.
Yeah, no, we went from they were 6-6 and lost the bowl game in that first year, and then 6-5 the next year with no bowl game, is I guess with a quirk, and then 3-9 and now 2-4 to the point where, you know, we talk about when you bring in a new coach, you kind of are in that year zero kind of rebuilding mode. Maybe almost he was able to do too much with what was there to begin with and kind of set a standard of getting to that bowl eligibility. And so far, I mean, it's the offense is not clicking to the degree that he was able to produce at some of his other stops. And like you said, there's at Rice, the results aren't there yet, but there is a fair amount of optimism that we're kind of seeing some positive things that make us believe they could be. At UTSA, the folks there on the ground are not nearly as optimistic as most Rice fans are at this point, which is not good for year 4.
Yeah, no. When you're that far in, because, you know, I think I mentioned this the previous time around or somewhat earlier in the podcast, but, you know, we're now in a cycle with the early signing period being what it is, where it's really... I think it's really unfair to place early expectations on coaches for them to succeed in kind of year 1 or year 2 of the program, because when you come in, you get, you know, the previous coach gets fired at the end of the regular season and you come in what, the first week of December? It was about when Mike Bloomgren was hired. That's going to be a normal timeline if you're bringing in a new coach.
I think he had like a week and a half before the early signing period began when he got here.
Yeah, you maybe get 2 weeks before that signing period. And that's when, and you can say, okay, well, yeah, but you can still sign guys in February. Well, if you check the numbers, something like 90% of FBS prospects signed in the early signing period last year. So, yeah, the late signing period is what it really is now in February. That still exists, but if you're not getting your guys in December, you know, you're going to your plan B and plan C guys. That's just the way the calendar works now with that early signing period. And so it puts such a burden on coaches who come in a way that it didn't happen before the early signing period existed. So all that to say, I think successful coaches are going to need more time now than they used to. But And so I say that as part of, like, you know, that's another reason to preach patience with this Rice program. But if you're in year 4, like Frank Wilson is at UTSA, and your results are continuing to just go down from there, that's a really tough spot to be in. And that's the results are slightly better for UTSA than Rice, as we'll touch on in a second. That's almost wholly because of schedule. But, you know, when you're in year 4 of a program, just from where they are in their coaches' tenures, it's completely understandable why there is such a difference in the feeling around the program between these two teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this season, and the thing is, when you get to this state of your program where you're at the point where you're hovering around a couple wins and getting to a bowl seems at the apex of what you could be capable of in any given season, you run through the list of, I'm not, coaches won't call them excuses, but we can call them excuses of why things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought when we did the mailbag podcast last week, and those would still be relevant, you want to check back, you can find all of our archives anywhere you can find our podcast. Go listen to those. One of the questions was, how many plays is Rice away from a winning record? And we were able to pull it down to like 7 or 8. You can kind of make and draw those dots in your two, and you can talk about recruiting and the players needed to come in. At this point in year four for UTSA, the players are supposed to be there. And Frank Wilson, you know, is supposed to be kind of a very good quarterback developer. And, you know, he had some bad luck with Frank Harris, their starting quarterback this year, going down it was just confirmed this week, but there'd been some, kind of some rumblings that he's out for the season now with an injury. And so they've moved on to their backup, Lowell Narcisse, which, you know, Carter, you and I were talking about off air before the podcast that we're trying to figure out how this guy was a 4-star recruit to LSU, because what we've seen so far on the field against athletes not the same caliber as SEC players, and he's been really bad.
Yeah, it just you know, I don't ever want to spend too much time. I always try to keep perspective talking about college football. You know, these are 19 to 22 year old kids who have a lot of expectations on them and all that stuff, but Narcisse just does not look like a Division I quarterback prospect out there. Like, he's a big guy. He's 6'3", 230, and he's very athletic. He's strong and he's fast and really uses his body well at that size. But he as a passer, he just doesn't look like a Division I quarterback. And it's you have to feel like that was a, you know, we said last time talking about recruiting that guys get their stars based largely on the offers they have. And that's true in large part, but you know, they get the offers they get based on actual coaching staffs, people who know a lot about football, making evaluations. And you have to assume that there was a lot of projection and a lot of banking on the physical talent when people were looking at Lowell Narcisse and guys at programs like LSU were giving him offers.
Because there's no coach or recruiting service in the world that says, oh, he's tall and fast, and we don't know if he can play football, but there's a coach. We'll teach him. We'll make him good. We've never seen that before.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it's a tough break for them, like you said, because Frank Harris was, like, not throwing for a stellar average, and he's not as good of a runner, maybe, as Narcisse is, but he was completing 72% of his passes, and I haven't gone through and manually adjusted the numbers for sacks, but I know I noticed they had one game where he had like 14 carries for 1 yard. So I think it's safe to say that that sacks probably affected Harris's numbers as a rusher a fair amount. But
yeah, and he's had a rough, like, he got injured, I believe, in the preseason last year and missed the season. And to go down, like, he was playing well. I mean, his season opener against Incarnate Word, like, rush from 100 yards, 3 for 3 touchdowns. I mean, he was Incarnate Word, but that's what you expect a good quarterback to do, right, to an FCS team. Like, that's what he's supposed to do. And, you know, he played well for the most part, or decently enough against Army. The offense as a whole wasn't very effective, but that's kind of part of what the Army game was. So, and I think up until the point where he got hurt, there was optimism in San Antonio, and people were kind of believing that, okay, this is going to be the guy that's going to help turn things around. And without him, I mean, this offense could be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And so, I mean, since we're getting there now, we might as well delve further into the matchup. So with Narcisse at quarterback, you know, he has completed under 50% of his passes, which, you know, whatever, it's going to happen sometimes with quarterbacks at this level, and if you're a backup who gets pressed into action. But 32 of 76 passes, 42%, not great. Yards per attempt, 3.6. 3.6. That's a bad rushing average.
Is that a real number?
Dude is averaging 5.5 yards a carry, 59 attempts for 326 yards. 76 passing attempts for 273 yards. He's averaging 2 more yards per carry as a rusher, and that's college football stats with sacks factored in, than he is passing the ball.
That's not good, Carter.
Like, Wiley Green is averaging like 5.5 yards per attempt, which is not good. That's not ideal. You like generally like a low efficiency passing game or a not explosive passing game. You want to average like 7+ yards per attempt. 3.6 is, I use the word ghoulish to get a little October spooky themed for you in the film room today. But that's almost, for a sample size larger than like 10 passes, that's almost unheard of. And I don't mean to spend all the time just piling on this kid, but it's all that to say that UTSA's passing offense is probably the worst.
It takes a component of your offense away.
Right. Exactly.
That's it's not so much just jumping on and piling on Narcisse, but when you're not, and I Rice fans can appreciate this because Rice, it was only in the past couple of weeks that we've seen really them try and stretch the field and throw beyond the sticks. But when you have a quarterback that is not throwing balls past the first down marker, it's hard to get first downs. Like, that's not rocket science. His longest completion this year is 25 yards. For better or worse, Wiley has had a completion of at least 25 yards in 4 of the 5 games that he's played, and he hasn't even been throwing downfield.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like a rushing-oriented team, like say you're an option team like Army or Navy, you know, you can live with an inefficient passing game if it's occasionally getting you big plays. Like if you're, you know, your completion percentage is maybe under 50%, but you're averaging like 25 yards of completion or something. Well, this kind of passing is not only inefficient in that you're completing 42% of them, but that's like you're only throwing screens and they're only going for 5 yards maybe each. So all that to say, this is not a passing attack that scares you. So really they're going to work on, they're going to run some option runs like the first play I highlighted in the film room, which is up now as of we're recording this on Wednesday night. It posted earlier today. You can read it if you're listening to this. So they're going to run some option stuff with him, and he's pretty good at that, and he's got some speed to work with, so they'll do some good stuff there. And then they've got a running back who is a freshman who has been legit one of the better running backs in the conference so far. He has the absolutely fantastic name of Sincere McCormick, and he's got some burst. He's got some speed. Like, he had a long touchdown run. I looked mostly, you know, because for the film room, I'm trying to look at ways in which opponents can actually pose a threat to Rice. And so I wanted to look at their win over UTEP to see, you know, what does this team with Narcisse at quarterback look like when they're playing well? And McCormick has a lot of burst. Like, he had a long touchdown run that the UTEP linebackers didn't really fill well in terms of plugging their gaps. But there were a couple guys, he had a long touchdown run that a couple guys that could have made a play, and he just accelerated so quick through the hole that they didn't really have a shot at him. So McCormick is a legit guy and is probably their best player on offense. And even if you don't pass that great, if you have an athletic quarterback who makes good decisions in the option game and you have a good, talented, fast running back like they do, you can still do some damage because that option game allows you to even out the numbers a little bit. And that can give you some efficiency in the running game, even when you can't really make them respect the pass. So it's going to be on the Rice defense to play disciplined, which is always the number one thing against the option, and to just, you know, I feel good about the matchup in that it just means that Rice needs to play like they have all year, because they've been really, really great at run defense against option teams, against teams that play a lot of the spread option stuff, against just about everybody who does just about anything. Rice has played well in run defense. So they just need to do what they've done all year, and they'll have a chance to shut down the UTSA running game. And that's kind of all they have.
Yeah, like when we talked about Army, even before the season, before we knew anything about how good this defense was going to be, we kind of said that the Army offense was tailor-made for what the Rice defense we thought was going to be good at, which was crowding the box and stopping the run. And it just an aside, Kelvin Hopkins Jr., Army quarterback, has thrown for more yards and has completed more passes of 25 yards or more than Lowell Narcisse. He's played four games instead of three, but aside, but getting back, this is kind of as you were alluding to, this is kind of the kind of offense that the Rice defense should match up well against. And they have guys and bodies in the mix that have proven their ability to close those gaps. And the thing that is going to be most telling, and you mentioned consistency, Sincere McCormick is really good. Like, not just UTSA or Conference USA good, but he looks like a very talented, explosive running back. And those are the kind of guys that you can shut down 15 times on 18 carries, but those three carries might be the difference. And he's had a carry of a 20-yard carry or more in four of five games, which Rice is moving the ball okay on the ground, but they're not getting big chunk plays regularly. They've had a couple. And then he's had a carry of 40 yards or more, 40, in three of his five games. So yeah, we know Rice is going to be strong against the run, and we know that the majority of the time they should be able to shut down McCormick and Narcisse, that combo, but that misstep or two, the formula for if we're going to go big picture and like, how does Rice fall behind or get in trouble in this game? It's having those two or three missteps that allow for big plays, that for an offense that's not very efficient, to get easy points. And that's what Rice has to prevent, is making sure that they're playing every single play and getting contain on McCormick and Narcisse.
Yeah. And it's all the more impressive for McCormick that he's doing this. You know, he's averaging 5.7 yards a carry. And yeah, that's been bolstered by some big runs. But, you know, like you said, all it takes is a couple big plays to get them out ahead. I don't think this is going to be a high scoring game in particular. So if Rice is, you know, you can be disciplined on 9 plays out of 10, but if you're not disciplined on the 10th play and it turns into a 60-yard touchdown, well, in a game where the margins are going to be like it is here, that one play can still cost you the game. I mean, think about Rice playing great defense except on 2 drives and being assignment sound outside of like one long pass play against Army, and those plays were the difference in the game. So even though UTSA doesn't present a threat in the passing game, you know, the fact that McCormick has played so well without the threat of that is all the more impressive. But it just reinforces the fact that you're going to have to be disciplined on every single down and play your gap and play your man and play your responsibility and not give this guy a crease, because if you give him a crease, he's going to take it to the house. So,
yeah, they might not be a complete offense, but McCormick and Narcisse, they're athletic football players.
And right.
Sometimes if you get that hole, you don't even have to be the fastest or the quickest or the smartest. You just need to run straight. And that's what Rice has to avoid presenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that presents itself well to the other side of the ball.
I did have one more quick note.
Yeah, go ahead.
On the offense and the wide receivers. UTSA, they played UAB this past week, and they had their first 100-yard receiver of the year. And not just against UAB, like, I mean, through the course of the entire season, they had one receiver reach 100 total receiving yards.
Oh, yeah. Carlos Strickland, the tight end.
Yeah.
Has 15 catches for 129 yards, and their next highest leading receiver, Blaze Moorhead, who caught the incredibly lucky touchdown pass from Narcisse that I highlighted in the film room this week, has 84 yards total on the year. So yeah, this is not they've spread the ball around a bit. They have several guys who have caught between like 40 and 84 yards, but not a lot of playmakers in the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about Rice and UTSA. These are both teams that want to run the football, and we kind of think of that as their identity first. I think Rice has shown, not consistently, but when they need to, they can move the ball through the air. Protecting the quarterback is something they're working on, but they can. UTSA so far, especially without Frank Harris, has not shown that ability. So if you can shut down that running game with Narcisse and McCormick and get them in 3rd and 10, you have a defense that just picked up their first 2 interceptions for Rice last weekend and could be setting them up some prime opportunities in good field position if they can do it again this week.
Yeah, I mean, what's Austin Trammell's most yards in a game this year?
I believe, didn't he just go over 100?
He had 113, yeah. So Rice has 2 different receivers who have had more yards in a game, in a single game, in Austin and Brad Rosner, than UAB's leading receiver, Blaze Moorhead, wide receiver. This is not including the tight end who has 129 right. yards, who have had more in a... Rice has 2 guys that have had more in a single game than UTSA's leading receiver has in all 6 of their games. So, you know, say what you will about the Rice passing game, it hasn't
the
been
mighty,
so
vaunted
far.
Rice passing
yeah,
game
I think
compared to those in San Antonio.
Entirely fair of us to say that the Rice passing game has not been a huge threat to teams so far. They're doing better than UTSA. So, yeah, that's it just reinforces that what we were saying, that, you know, if you can shut down their rushing attack, you pretty much shut down the whole offense.
Which now that I think that leads us into a good transition to what Rice needs to do on the other side of the ball.
Yeah. And it's UTSA's strength dovetails well there. They're strong on the defensive line. They have a ton of guys up there. At end, they have a lot of guys at end. Solomon Wise, Lorenzo Dantzler. They have some good guys at defensive tackle. They just inserted a linebacker, Trevor Harmonson, into the starting lineup like 2 games ago, and he already leads the team in tackles for loss. So they've got some good guys in the front, which is going to present a challenge for Rice in terms of, because, you know, like we talked about a year, how much Rice wants to run the ball. But I like the matchup for Rice better than I like it for UTSA on the other side of the ball, because, like we've been talking about, Rice at least has the ability to pass well, even if they haven't always done it consistently. And I think it's probably going to be the difference in this game is which team executes better in the passing game. And sure, yeah, like we said, the Rice, you know, at quarterback and receiver have not been consistent in presenting a threat all season, but they've shown that they can do it. Whereas UTSA, particularly with Narcisse at quarterback, really has not.
Yeah, and I think especially on that ground attack that we, you know, kind of is the base for both offenses, UTSA so far is last in Conference USA in yards per attempt allowed. They're averaging 5.8 yards per carry, or that rather their opponents are, which you don't have to do the math. If you run twice at 5.8 a carry, you get a first down, and then you never have to face third down, and then Rice's third down woes are not an issue. They've also given up 14 rushing touchdowns, which is second most in the conference. And so they've played Baylor, they've played Army, similar, and both of which Rice played, and Rice has fared better against. I mean, shoot, they almost beat Army and debatably almost beat Baylor, or at least at a position where they were close in the fourth quarter, and UTSA was not in either of those. So from measuring sticks, that's another thing that kind of points to Rice and this matchup.
Right. And, you know, to kind of tie this back earlier to what we were saying about the kind of the difference in where these two teams feel like they are, the difference in record in these two teams is entirely based in the schedule, because they played 3 common opponents so far in Baylor, Army, and UAB. And I'll throw a shout out to Jared Kalmus here, who's the UTSA guy at Underdog Dynasty, a friend of the program. On their podcast this week, they pointed out that against those three common opponents, the average scoring differential is minus 10 for Rice and minus 29 for UTSA. And then you look at the opponents they didn't have in common, and you're looking at, let's say, Louisiana Tech and North Texas, even as North Texas has kind of disappointed a little bit this season. We can probably call those pretty similar caliber opponents. And Rice led or was tied the whole game with Louisiana Tech and lost in overtime. And UTSA got beat 45-3 against UNT. And then the other two opponents for Rice were Texas and Wake Forest. And the other two opponents for UTSA, against whom they have their two wins, are Incarnate Word and UTEP. So, you know, I've seen some mild incredulity that, quote, winless Rice is a road favorite this week against UTSA. Well, look at who the wins have come against for UTSA. Like I and to the credit of the smart and good UTSA fans that we know, I don't think they have expressed really surprise at that, because they've watched the two teams and they know what the situation is going into this. But I've seen some people who are surprised by that. But all it takes is a quick glance. You don't even have to dive into advanced numbers at all. Just look at the schedules and look at the results. And results can be misleading, but look at the results and you'll see exactly why Rice is favored and deserves to be going into this game.
Yeah, every Rice fan might not be, even those who don't follow football, will have at least heard of and known that every school on Rice's schedule exists. Like, there are people probably at UTSA and Rice that if you said, oh yeah, they played Incarnate Word, that would say, what's that? Or where is
that? Yeah, and like, and
there were people within UTSA that were worried that Incarnate Word could upset them in a San Antonio showdown in the first week of the season. So, I mean, and that is what it is. And credit to UTSA in this, they won those games. And you're supposed to win games against teams that aren't as good as you are. And actually, funny enough, UTEP was favored. They were at home, but UTEP was favored over UTSA when they played, and UTSA won that game. So I know we've talked about a lot about, you know, the offense and the struggles that UTSA has had, but credit to them at this, that they've are at a point where there's enough red flags that they could have folded and given up and thrown it in and maybe gone the Houston route of let's redshirt all of our good players and save them. That's never not going to get old, by the way. We'll keep bringing that. That's like, bizarre.
Wow. Like, there, this is a complete aside. We probably should not waste time. But like, I get that from a coach's perspective.
Oh,
like,
it makes perfect sense.
I've watched enough. Right. Like, I'm an NBA fan. I watch teams tank all the time. I've seen, you know, just for any Houston fans, you know, the Astros did this as well as anyone has ever done. They were terrible for like a couple years to build up the farm system a little bit. And then they have just built from there. Like, there is absolute logic to this. When this year wasn't going to be great, bring those guys back. But in college, it's so like there's a guy who
Houston doesn't get Jose Altuve at the end of this.
Right. Like, there's no draft. And like there's a guy, I can't remember his name, but he was a guy who was a grad transfer to Houston this year, had just 1 year of eligibility remaining, had a lot of injuries, and was counting on this to be his kind of 1 year. And then you can't just quit on a season in college football, like, as much sense as it might make in the abstract. Like, you just think about the ways you're absolutely screwing over the seniors you have. Like, again, I reiterate, I get it from Dana's perspective. I get it from a macro level. But from a PR level and a a message you're sending to your team level. I just, man, that's a decision right there. And if you're comfortable living with it, if you think you can still recruit fine after it, if you're the higher ups in the administration and the university are fine with it, then all right. But like, man, that's a bold decision to make.
You feel better?
Yeah.
Yeah, I echo all those. I get the logic behind it, but no, man, that's there. And I think so. Rice and Houston, you know, are rivals that we'll play on the football field. And I think that game is scheduled, and we play like 6 out of the next 8 years or something like that. It's coming back. But I mean, here's an opportunity for Rice. You're looking at two programs that Rice was already rebuilding. Houston, I mean, was to some degree, but they had a lot of talented players, and they hit their own reset button without anyone forcing them to. So,
well, and they brought in Tillman Fertitta threw his weight around and brought in a guy who had been a coach at a reasonably successful Power 5 program to be their coach. And, you know, I think Dana's a great coach. I think he fits more in Texas than he does in West Virginia. There's a lot of things to like about that, but this is an interesting message to send at this point in where they are. So, yeah, you get where the long-term play is there, but there's a lot of risks in this.
Yeah, and tying it back into Rice, I mean, and Coach Blomgren is a very smart and savvy guy, and this came up, I think it was the press conference right after. I don't remember if all of this went down on like a Sunday or a Monday, something like that. It was right after the game against Tulane. So it must have been like a Sunday or Monday. And press conference, Bloom basically said, he's like, I'm so glad that this is not happening on our football team. So it's not something that you're going to see from Rice. You will see the inverse of that, whether or not you won't see established players taking 4 games and then sitting out, but you will see up and coming players taking their 4 games and getting their chances. And, you know, that's who Wiley Green was last year. And I think if you're continuing to build this program the way that Blomgren is intending to, you'll continue to see. There will be players. So Rice has had 4 true freshmen so far this year that have played in every game. And you'll see that, but you also see a handful of folks that are getting snaps down. Now that we have 6 weeks left in the season, you're going to see not a lot more freshmen, but you will start to see some specific freshmen that will become, you know, important players for certain packages or plays or certain things. So, wow, that was a complete aside. But
yeah, I think, and the last area I want to go to on this game is we've preached a lot of optimism on this podcast, and I think it's all been very fair. But I do want to add a note of, I think there really needs to be a sense of urgency for Rice in this game, because, you know, we've said all along that the results this year aren't really what matters. And win or lose in this game, I don't think it changes the long-term outlook, ultimately. But this is a game you not only can win, but should win. Like, you know, like we went over, they're favored, and rightfully so. And that's true in basically, you know, whether it's Vegas setting the line or any analytics system you look at, like, they're favored in FPI. I think they're favored in a couple other things I've looked at there. It's basically a toss-up in Bill Connolly's SP Plus, but that's only because they're on the road. I think Rice would be almost a touchdown favorite if this game were at Rice Stadium. So this is a game that you're expected to win. And so sometimes that can be almost detrimental in terms of, you know, you don't ever want to prepare as though you're guaranteed to win. And I don't think Rice is in a position where they can act like any game is a guaranteed win. But feeling like you're expected to win, especially after you've lost a whole lot, can be a weird position to be in. And so I think my number one thing this week is that Rice just needs to stay focused and do their jobs. Don't play this game any differently than you played the six that have gone before it. All these ones that have been against a lot of teams that are kind of outside your talent bracket, and you've had to deal with that and deal with the losing in spite of playing well, often at times as well as you could reasonably have been expected to play. So they just need to keep their focus and not lose track of where they are in the moment, and not feel the pressure of either feeling like they have to win this game, but also not feeling like we're going to win this game. So they just need to keep that focus and keep that level of play up that they have so far. And if they do, we've stayed away from predictions, but like, I feel like Rice should win this game. Like, I feel like with what they've shown so far, it would be a disappointment for them to not win this game, because they have shown themselves more than capable time and time again this season of playing at a level that you need to win this game. And so it's a weird thing being a favorite in the seventh game when you're 0-6. Yeah, and I recognize that's a weird and tough situation to be in. And I just, you know, if I were a coach on this team, my number one message this week would be focus, focus, focus. Don't think about the record. Don't think about that you're favored. Don't think about anything like that. Just focus, 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 and play your game. Because if they play their game and they play like they're capable of, they play like they have played. They don't have to play above a standard. You know, it's not like going against Texas or Wake Forest or Baylor, where you kind of need to play out of your mind and play above the level that might be your normal level. Just be who you are and you'll win this game. But that's kind of a tough situation to be in after six straight losses.
Yeah. And I mean, so like, let's rewind all the way back to the first episode of this podcast that we ever did, when we talked through the schedule. And we didn't make any bold, you know, wide sweeping predictions or go game by game. But when we looked at the first four non-conference games, we said, those are going to be hard. Rice is probably not going to be in a position to win all those. And then you looked at UAB, who won the conference last year, and Louisiana Tech, which has won five straight bowl games. And at the beginning of the year, if you knew nothing about this team and you knew they started 0-6, you would have said, okay, like, I wish we would win one, but that wouldn't have shocked. I don't think that would have shocked any Rice fans. And the last program that UTSA has beaten that's not named UTEP was Rice at Rice Stadium last year. And that was a game that, going into it, it kind of felt like Rice maybe not should win, but should be competitive in. And Rice really never was in that game. UTEP jumped out to an early lead and Rice kind of played catch up. And, you know, I think it's telling that I was talking to Coach Bloomgren this week about it. And I said, I know you're not in the business of declaring any game a must win game. And stepping back and aside, if Rice loses this game to UTSA, like, we don't have to burn it to the ground. Like, there is a macro level and a vision and a bigger picture than any one football game. But with that said, in Bloomgren's own words, he said that he's seen progress in each of these first six games that they haven't won, but he can point to things and say that we're getting better. I said, what's progress in the game against UTSA? And he said, winning it. And yep. So I think from his own words, and I'm not going to paint him into a corner, but it's going to be very hard for him to look at his coaching staff and his team if they don't beat UTSA and not have to kind of reconsider this process. He's not going to, it won't be a sweeping changes, clean house kind of thing, but it's a point where like there needs to be some sort of adjustments made to the approach or something, because Rice, like we've laid out, like offensively, they've had more high points than UTSA, and defensively they've fared better against the common opponents than UTSA. So this is a game that if we want to see progress from Rice against UTSA is winning, which is a hard thing to ask for a program favored for the first time all season on the road that hasn't won a game yet. But like, that was kind of the vision for this season, is going to places where this program hasn't been under Bloomgren, and that's winning conference games and winning multiple conference games. And if you don't beat UTSA, that ask gets a lot tougher.
Right. And it's exactly, you know, this ties exactly back into what we were saying earlier. On the macro level, on a broad long-term development perspective, does it make a huge difference if they win this game or not? No. But on the micro level, in the moment of this season and where you are in terms of your development, will it be a disappointment if they don't win this one? Will it feel like a step back? Whereas basically every game except UAB this season, and UAB was such a weird circumstance with the lightning and the weather and all that stuff, like, you wanted to see...
There will be no weather in San Antonio.
Yeah.
There is a dome.
In the Alamo Dome. But you could reasonably say that every game, at least on some level, has felt like a step forward for this team so far this year. If they lose to UTSA, that's going to be a step back. And, you know, on a macro level,
you can take step backs and still get better at the end of the season. No matter what happens,
yeah.
There's 12 games. They'll have five more to play. You can still eclipse two wins in five games.
This is something I preach all the time about development of players, and it applies to any sport, but I've talked about it with football in particular. Development is not linear. It's never linear. It just goes, you get better and better and better and better and better the whole time. Everyone takes step forwards and steps back. So if you take a step back here, that doesn't mean a whole lot in terms of the long-term view. But it will be a step back if you don't win it. And I think that's a fair expectation to have. I don't think if any coaches were listening to this, that they would disagree about any of that. That I feel like they would and should expect to win this game, and that there will be... And not that they haven't been disappointed to lose the games they've lost so far, but it'll be a disappointment to lose this game. And I think that's absolutely fair, and I think it's right. I think it's what you want as a program to have expectations. So, yeah, I think that's all I've got for UTSA. That's, you know, even though it's not a huge opponent, it's a big, big game. As it's not an overall referendum, like we've said, on where this program is and where they're going, but there's a real expectation here that they should have and need to have about where they are coming out of this game.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting, because that expectation has been built because we've seen how much better they are than last year. Like, if they'd start 0-6 and they'd looked like they looked last year, where the secondary was giving up multiple 60-yard touchdowns every game and the offense wasn't scoring points, like, neither of those issues have been 100% resolved, but we've seen enough where, like, we're talking about this and we're looking at and comparing, as, you know, people who are trying to be as objective as possible, like, we've seen enough from Rice, and like, Vegas and the odds makers, people who built those casinos and monuments in the desert, have seen enough from a winless Rice to think of this as not being outlandish. And if Rice can continually play people that are a lot better than them close, then if UTSA is, from a talent perspective, we'll call them on par, certainly not at the same caliber as, you know, the Texas or the Wake Forest or Baylor's, like, that's the point. If you've been a little bit up punching above your belt on some of these better teams, then you need to continue to punch above your belt against a conference team, and it's a conference team that's in a similar place to you are. So we'll have a lot to say about this game after the fact. For now, I think I'll go ahead, and since we're wrapping up, we'll plug the go ahead and look at the film room. Carter did a fantastic job there, kind of looking at some of the run plays and what we can expect from McCormick and Narcisse there. And then we'll have some practice notes up for members later this week as well. And we'll have a couple more things coming out. We have a game preview with some X factors that's always up on the site. And then always we have that forum that is for y'all to go ahead and ask questions. And if y'all have anything for us or for me that you're curious about the team this week, you just go ahead and jump on there and send us a note, and love to kind of help you get inside where this program is at. I feel like they're in a similar place to where a lot of Rice fans are right now, that they're really, 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 really hoping that this is going to be the breakthrough.
All right. Well, I think that's it for us this week. Apologies for going a little longer than usual, but I feel like it was all good discussion. I hope y'all really enjoyed it. But we'll be back next week breaking down this game. And wow, I don't even know who's up the week after that. Who is it? Is it Southern Miss?
Southern Miss.
Oh, straight into Southern Miss. Great. Well, we'll be previewing Southern Miss going into next week and then coming out of this game, hopefully talking about the first Rice win of the year. So we'll see y'all then, and Rice fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.